the home team.
And here we go.
All right, kicking into hour number two, the home team, presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. We had a weird start time for the show yesterday, and in lieu of the 5 at 5, we had a 1 at 1, a 2 at 2, a 3 at 3, and a 4 at 4, which I realize is actually more work than the 5 at 5, because that equals 10, right?
That equals 10, yes. 4 plus 3 plus 2 plus 1 comes out to 10.
Yeah, that's double the 5 at 5.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, well, you know, made it through, and now we're back at our usual time slot. No more Braves until next March or April or whenever opening day is. The Braves will be the subject of today's 5 at 5 as it does return. Brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And Jeff, the Braves season has come to an end. For what should it be remembered the most? What the big takeaway from 2018 for the Atlanta Braves?
I think 99.9% positive, Chris. I mean, you had the emergence of Acuna and Albies, another great year from Freddie Freeman, those young pitchers that got called up that got those wins when the Braves really needed them. And for a team that's over-under out in Las Vegas for wins was it 74.5, 75.5?
Somewhere in that
ballpark. Like you said,
yeah.
Chris, I mean, they wound up in the 90s and won the division. I mean, I think if you'd have asked any Braves fan that before the season, if they'd have taken it, absolutely they would have.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was disappointing that Atlanta went out, but not totally unexpected. It was the Dodgers, after all.
Well, let me flip this on you then. I was thinking about this today when I was out for my walk, which actually ran a little bit today and my legs hurt. I was saying, as devastating as the championship game was, yet it was still such an incredible year for Georgia. Just one of the greatest seasons in Georgia history. And this year, I know we're making too many mistakes with the penalties and all that, yada, yada, yada. But we've won every game by at least 14 points this year.
Yeah.
Which is, and we're 6-0. So let's pretend for a second, what would the mood, Chris, of the Bulldog Nation be if, let's say, Sony, Nick, and Lorenzo had gone pro after 2016? And last year, let's say we went 10-2 or 9-3. Or let's just say we went 10-2, maybe won the East, lost in Atlanta, or won a bowl game. So wound up at 10-3, 11-3. You know, what would the feeling be right now if we were 6-0?
Undefeated and ranked number 2?
We would be through the moon.
Yeah.
Absolutely would be.
Right.
And we were so fortunate to get those guys back. And if they don't come back, who knows? Maybe we only lose to Notre Dame in the regular season in addition to Auburn, and we go 10-2 and still get in. We probably don't win the SEC title game without those guys. And then let's say you win a bowl. Let's say you win in Orlando or Tampa and you go 11-3. Then all of a sudden, if those guys hadn't come back, it's like, well, this is the year we've been building for. Look, I told you, we're 6-0. We've won every game by double digits.
The last two wins have been by 26 and 28 points against teams that 2 years ago beat us in Athens.
Correct.
And yet still, I didn't really like what I saw in this one deal or that deal or this deal or that deal. And
it's in our blood. I mean, just from years of just, I mean, I got to tell you.
I mean, does that make us are we a good fan base or a bad fan base?
We've suffered from beaten fan syndrome. And again, and it's not like we stunk. We've been so close to it, so close to the top of the SEC and the whole thing. But it's like just when you get there, there's always, like in 07, that game against South Carolina. You know, in 2012, to catch a tipped ball. You know, we catch the pass to end the game, but
right,
it's not for the touchdown.
Sure.
So we've come so close, and it's just been pulled out from us that I think it's going to take a couple of years of being excellent before we get used to it. Now, on the other end, we don't need to go out there and be cocky because, you know, we've had one great season in the last five. But I do think we should absolutely be confident and have great expectations and fully expect to have a darn good chance to win every Saturday. But just, you know, years of heartbreak and heartache, you can't just get that out of your system in 1 year.
I guess not, but that's just knowing all that suffering that's been done, I would just think, which including, I mean, part of that is was at the hands of Georgia's last two opponents 2 years ago.
Oh, my gosh, to lose those two at home?
In the manner that they did, and to come back 2 years later and beat those teams by 26 and by 28 points, and just the idea of, like, well, I wasn't completely satisfied, though, with what I – with what I witnessed.
But just, yeah, so just think about it from that angle. Had Sony and Nick decided to go pro, and Georgia still had a good year last year but wound up winning losing three games and, you know, didn't really sniff the playoff. And then you're sitting there at 6, and I'd be, all right, well, this is the year we've been waiting for. And in all honesty, when Kirby got here, this was kind of the year we were pointing at, because we knew that class of 17, those guys would be sophomores in this year. And, you know, and let's face it, too, in 2016, you felt, well, Eason will be a junior in that year. This was the year we originally pointed to. Well, that just also goes to show you never know what can happen. Eason's not here, and we're better at quarterback with Fromm and Fields. But the return of all those veterans last year, and then for Roquan Smith to go from being a very good player to being an all-timer player, for Rodrigo Blankenship to emerge as the weapon he has. There was so much unexpected that happened for Georgia in a positive manner last year. It fast-tracked everything, but then a lot of those guys left.
Well, so as this being that year that maybe was targeted, Georgia's not as good on defense as it was last year. Georgia's about the same in not running the ball. Georgia's still good running the ball, but offensively, the Dogs are, doing just fine.
Yeah, probably, I would say, a little bit better on the O-line, but we've been beaten up.
Yeah, but quarterback and receiver hasn't had a drop-off.
I mean, probably better, because Fromm's a sophomore and you got Fields.
Yeah.
And receiver, we miss Wims, but, you know, you've had Holloman come on. And you could see, too, getting Terry Godwin back at 100% last week.
Yeah, I mean, he made the, you know, Georgia's offense, I guess we had punted, right?
Yeah.
And then they come down and they score, and then – Georgia basically hits one play, and that's it. We're not trailing anymore.
And by the way, that was the type of thing that's what great teams do. I mean, because that's a type of thing when you look at you-know-who over there, it's like, boy, you put together this long drive, then they make a great play and stuff you, you kick a field goal, and you're feeling okay. Then one play later, you're behind.
Well, that's basically what you-know-who did at Ole Miss.
Yeah,
where Ole Miss did strike, and then within three plays, the game was tied.
The greatest stat there, I looked up. We were watching that game, and we were just all having dinner. There were about three or four couples, and it was 7-0 one play in. Then with 4 minutes and 53 seconds to go in the first quarter, it was 28-7.
Yeah.
I was like, just turn this. I got to watch anything else.
Just like that,
that
Bama was on pace to score 100.
They're on pace to score 100 points, yeah. Yes.
I guess for the Braves with me, I mean, it's hard not to say that Ronald Acuna and what he did hitting all those leadoff home runs isn't going to be the – if there's one thing that I think you always, like, your memory goes back to with this season, it's going to be him coming onto the scene. But – for me, back before the year started, why I wasn't buying the Braves, I thought Atlanta's offense would be pretty good, had a chance to be pretty good, but I just couldn't trust the starting pitching to hold up over a 162-game marathon. And the Braves' starting pitching is more than anything is what exceeded expectations this season. And, you know, and I know Soroka ended up getting shut down, but, you know, if this wasn't just a one-hit wonder type of season for Fultonevich, that'd be good moving forward. And
that was a great move getting Gossman, too, by the front office.
Yeah, that ended up being a good trade. And I know, I mean, historically, his ERA is almost a full run lower in the second half of the season than it is in the first half. So the Braves definitely benefited from that, because he pitched really well in the second half of the year, which is how his career has arced. Now, of course, now that he's a Brave, it'd be better if he was a little more consistent from beginning to end.
So will that be the key for them next year? Can they find somebody to shore up that bullpen? You know, maybe one or two guys. And does the organization that has produced so many great arms in the past, there's some good ones there now, you know, can a couple of those guys fill out the rotation as well? Because for me, just when I was able to watch him, I look at this offense. I think the offense is there, and I think you assume these guys are going to get better. There might be a little sophomore slump for Acuna and Albies, but they're still going to be good. I just look at Atlanta and say they are three or four pitchers away to me. I think two in the rotation and two in the bullpen away from being maybe the best team in the National League. And sometimes, you know, you run into it, and, you know, whether you're watching, you know, any Georgia sport or any Atlanta team or whoever your favorite team might be, when you've got a good team and you run into somebody who's really, really, really good or great, you just see the separation. And you're exactly right, Chris. I think Atlanta's starting pitching did exceed. And then you look at that rotation that the Dodgers roll out there, and it's like, you're not in that class.
No, not yet. But I mean, the Braves have so many young arms, that's definitely where you hope they're tracking. I mean, outside of Sanchez, who was the one veteran that they had, in McCarthy, at the beginning of the season.
How you think that guy will be better than Clayton Kershaw next year?
Not quite yet.
Not quite yet.
But, you know, maybe there's somebody in the farm system that one day will be a Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, you certainly hope so. And it was a fun season for Braves fans. And I thought it was great yesterday watching the game. And once it was 6-2, let's face it, it was over. Everybody was still chopping away, and Atlanta had two on. And – you know, having that long foul ball that would have made it 6-5.
Well, at least in the one game that the Braves won, it was Acuña hit the grand slam, then Freeman hit the home run. So the two, basically the guys moving forward long term, big picture for the franchise, are the ones in the one game the Braves did win in the playoffs, were the two guys that ended up delivering. And then even yesterday, I guess Freeman was. Did he get on base every time?
Yeah, he had a good game. I think, did he walk twice?
He got a couple of hits, too.
And Atlanta didn't have Swanson. That certainly didn't help.
No, it didn't. Because there was – in fact, on the ball that Freeze hit, I mean, that was within a shortstop's range.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if maybe Swanson makes that play and where Culberson didn't.
I think he at least keeps that ball in the infield. Sure. I'm not sure he gets the out, but right. I think he'd have saved one run.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was just – I mean, Culberson was just out of his reach.
Right.
And that was a play maybe Swanson does make.
No, I agree. Now, I was talking to Bill Shanks at one of the Georgia games earlier this year, and I hear him on with Dave and Sam too, and he said they've got a really good third base prospect in the minors too.
Yeah, Austin Riley.
There you go.
But that's – yeah, I mean, that's kind of a interesting angle now too is – everyone's assumption was that he was coming up, but Johan Camargo this year had a good year where he was, you know, maybe tapping the brakes on that idea.
So that could – one of those guys, that's where you could be talking about some potential trade bait too.
Yeah, I think the only spot where the Braves were below average this year was their relief pitching. Starting pitching was better than average. I mean, they had the best first baseman in the National League, if not all of baseball.
The infield was excellent.
Infield was fine. The outfield was terrific too.
Because you had NCR, of course, Acuña, Inciarte, Marquez.
Yeah. And Inciarte got off to a slow start, but
he's a good player.
After the Braves made that trade with the Reds, it was like that lit a fire under Inciarte because the idea was he was going to end up being a platoon player. And I think he went out and went like 5-for-5.
He did. So I do like their lineup. I don't know about the age at catcher. Oh, Kurt Suzuki. That guy, he was catching for Fullerton when we were out in Omaha in 2004. That was 14 years. I mean, he's very good, though. Suzuki's a heck of a catcher.
I mean, that spot could be better, but Suzuki and Flowers have been fine.
Yeah, they're fine there.
As a platoon.
So what that would get, and I don't know if they've got a guy down in the farm system, but there's no need to rush anybody up. But I like Suzuki in particular a lot. I've always liked
him. Yeah, I mean, I guess he's a guy that they'd have to re-sign him. He is a free agent.
They need to keep him, though.
Yeah, because I don't think there are like a ton of really any prospects on a farm right now.
So the next guy up, if you're talking about a Freeman, Acuña, Albies type player, would be the catcher, the third baseman.
Riley,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, other than in a position player, pitchers. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just telling you though that Kyle Wright, he didn't have a great record at Vanderbilt, but it was just one of those deals. Like we beat him and beat them here 1-0 2 years ago. I mean, Cam Shepard hit a solo home, and Cam's a great player off of him, but he was dominant. I mean, absolutely dominant. And you know that was a guy when the Braves drafted him. You know, all right, they're thinking fast track to the big leagues, and sure enough, September of what he would have been basically out of Vanderbilt, a year and a month. Or a year and 2 months by the time he gets the call. So I've got to think he's in their plans one way or the other. And maybe he is a bullpen guy because he can hit those upper 90s. I don't know if they're thinking about him as a closer or maybe as a starter.
Yeah, they got to find someone there because, I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in Arodys Vizcaíno.
Boy, that was, you know, talking about shutting the game one. First and second in a 3-0 count.
Yeah.
Toe.
Got out of it, though,
Woo!
Somehow. On the subject of Vanderbilt pitchers, if there is a silver lining, Jeff, to the Yankees losing to the Red Sox, there will be more opportunities to make money on David Price October starts. With the Yankees last night, though, is that the most embarrassing loss for them ever? 16-1 at home to their rival in the postseason.
Yes.
Okay.
On to the next question.
And for the first time ever, like a guy hits for the cycle in the playoffs?
Yes.
The Yankees end up throwing Austin Romine came in and started pitching.
Whitey 48.
No, in fact, he's not even a pitcher.
He's not even. Yeah, that'd be like if Yogi took to the bump. No, it was awful. It was crazy. In the second inning, Boston hit that comebacker that went off of Severino's glove. He doesn't field it cleanly. They get a run across. Then a Stanton, of all people, gets on board. And DD lays down a bunt against that shift. They call him safe. Then the replay did show he was out. They can't get the run home. And it was like, yeah, this ain't looking good. And then it was 3-0. Then it was 7-0. And it was.
Yeah, no, like Aaron Boone got a lot of grief because the Yankees have such a good bullpen. And it's like he just sat there and let Severino toil. But at the end of the day, the Yankees scored one run. It didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
Everything else that Boston ended up tacking on was just. You know, rubbish, really.
You know what's crazy? That Benintendi, and you know, Dave can back us up on this too. He had just an unbelievable final season at Arkansas. I can't remember if it was his junior or senior year. I mean, he almost like won the Triple Crown in the SEC. And he had just kind of been like an okay everyday player the years prior. And then he just, I mean, he was unanimous SEC MVP. And it was like, God, where did this guy come from? What happened? He had 20-something bombs, and then next thing you know, he's in Boston. I mean, he and Mookie Betts. The thing with those guys can run. They're terrific all-around players. And Boston won 108 games. The Yankees won 100. That's a heck of a divisional series there. And Houston won 103, and they're awaiting the winner.
Well, maybe the Yanks can at least make them earn it in Fenway.
Yeah, need to win tonight. But, you know, CC. At least it won't be too hot. I worry about him in day games in the summer.
Well, every start he makes is potentially the last one he's going to make in pinstripes, so he could have a little extra something for him. Moving on to the 5-5, Jeff, Georgia-LSU coming up on Saturday. Opening arguments for the Dogs and the Bayou Bengals.
Opening arguments for Georgia, Chris. I like this team on the road. It's a business-type atmosphere. I like what I see with this team. We got to cut out the penalties for sure. That's first and foremost. I think the run defense has got to get better too. That would be worry number two. Chris, a couple of positives to throw out there. Georgia's doing a lot of great things on offense, on defense, and on special teams. And kind of a little plus, we talk about it being such a long season now. So here we are, game six going into game seven. It looks like DeAndre Swift and Terry Godwin are at form.
It does, and that's, you know, LSU is, their run defense hasn't been stout so far this season, so maybe those guys can keep, you know, breaking out. Even Ole Miss had a guy go for like 90-something yards against them when they blew them out a couple of weeks ago. Also, this team, they're 18-17-3 at home against the spread in the last 5 years, and that does include six straight-up losses. So, you know, the idea of Georgia walking into this, you know, formidable place to go and play, I think, has been overrated here lately.
So they've lost in the last how many years? How
last
many...
5 years. They've lost six games at
okay.
home.
That's good.
Including one to Troy.
Yes, indeed.
Last year. But even just when you go, I mean, they haven't been a home underdog much. This is the fifth time in the last five. They're 2-2 in that there, and then they're 16-15-1 just overall as a favorite. So 18-17-3, rather pedestrian as a home team, ATS. And remember, well, sports fans, good teams win, great teams cover.
Indeed.
So that, I mean, because so much, I feel like there's more talk about, And I get it. Georgia doesn't play there a lot anymore, and who knows when the next time Georgia will play there. And you know, so a lot of Georgia fans are going to be making the trip, but you know, I think the reality of Death Valley and Tiger Stadium is just this environment that you have no chance of winning at, and you got to be ready for it. And I hear they're crazy there. Maybe all those things are true, but that is that's not a place where it has been difficult to succeed for opposing teams.
Well, Dogs won on the last visit there back in 2008.
Yep. Won there in 1998 as well.
Yep. 78.
Should have won there in 03.
48. Should have.
Yeah.
By the way, that was a game, if you want to go back and trace the tracks of history and just really torture yourself as a Georgia fan, where two coaches' careers intersected.
Saban and Rick. Jeff, we'll do the NFL top five, bottom five next hour, but just a quick thought here would be, are the Falcons currently a bottom five team? Hot, they are 1-4. They have, I believe, they have the second worst point differential now in the NFC.
Well,
at a minus 30 after getting routed by Pittsburgh. So I get it. They've had injuries, but they are what they are. Are they a bottom five team, or do you want to wait till next hour to reveal that?
I think they are better than that, because the thing is, they could very easily be 4-1.
Sure.
But the Cincinnati loss, the dropped interception there, the Saints, they had the ball. You know, as bad as the defense has been, they had the ball 37-37, plenty of time with timeouts, couldn't go down and score. You got to win at least one of those. The game at Philly, you get inside the 5-3 times, or inside the 10, whatever it was, 3 times, get 3 points. And you can't lose all 3 of those, or guess what? You can.
Well,
so there's just no margin for error with this team right now. So if they're not in the bottom five, you know, to me, a bottom five team's not going to have Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, but it's also, you know, what are you getting from this team forward now?
Well, they are 1-4, and only the Cardinals have a worse point differential than Atlanta does in the NFC.
Do you think they're a bottom five team?
No.
I don't either.
I don't. But
that
suddenly
defense.
The case is there.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Even knowing all the injuries and all this, let's say Atlanta winds up going 6-10. Does Arthur Blank part ways with Dan Quinn?
Maybe. I mean, Mr. Blank the other day came out with some quote about, hey, I don't want to hear any excuses.
I saw that too.
Yeah.
That was, if you're Dan Quinn, that would be the first red flag.
That's not a vote of confidence, which usually those are dreaded anyway. The dreaded vote of confidence.
That was like one with the soap opera in Knoxville when Fulmer had a quote in the summer. He said, oh, yeah, we've got the talent here for Jeremy to compete right away. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
You are on notice, sir.
Well, a point about the defense, too. The injuries have wrecked Atlanta's defense.
Sure.
If Atlanta had these guys healthy, Atlanta's defense would be terrific right now. That's the way it was looking. But right now, what Atlanta's defense is, really, the Saints' defense isn't much better, but they're 4-1, and the Falcons are 1-4. So, to Arthur Blank's point of, I don't hear any excuses. This is what we've got, and maybe it should be better. And the Saints are winning with a pitiful defense, but the Falcons right now are not.
And the Falcons had every opportunity to win in Philadelphia. And, again, if Trufant catches the interception against Cincinnati, you know, if Atlanta goes down and scores, you got Matt Ryan and Matt Bryant and all that time against the Saints.
Yeah.
If you just win two of those, you're 3-2, and you're okay.
It's different. Yeah, I mean, last week was that was probably a game they weren't going to win either way, one way or another.
They got to win these next two just to be respectable.
Well, yeah, they're back at home against the Bucks, and then they've got the Giants on Monday night.
Oh, God.
By the way, the Bucks are crazy. You know, they're averaging 7 yards a play on offense. That is the second best number in the league behind the Rams. Unfortunately for the Bucks, they're allowing 7 yards per play on defense. So
take the over.
Yeah.
With whoever they're playing.
Well, they're playing the Falcons.
Well, take the over.
Yeah. Although I don't know if their offense is going to be as good now because, you know, they've got Winston back at quarterback.
That's a soap opera.
All right. That's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.